Hello, everybody. This is Steve from the Diecast Movie Podcast, where we do two main types of episodes, those where a die is cast to decide the genre of the movie that we're going to discuss, and interviews, too. And today we're going to have a little bit of both. I'm going to be talking to Ron Adams about the latest Monster Bash that's coming up this October 13th through the 15th, 2023. And we're going to do a movie discussion about Dr. X. I hope everybody enjoys the episode. And I'll talk to you more after you hear Ron and I talk about the Monster Bash and Dr. X. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of the Diecast Movie Podcast. And once again, I'm going to be joined by Ron Adams, the grand poobah of Monster Bash. We're going to be talking about the Monster Bash that's coming up October 2023. And also, we're going to be talking about the classic film Dr. X. First, how are you doing today, Ron?
I'm doing fine. When you call me the Grand Poobah, I can't help but think of the Flintstones, the lodge that Fred and Barney belonged to. But
yeah, it wasn't like the Grand Buffalo, like they had the buffalo hats or something.
Yeah.
But instead of buffalo hats, you pass out orange shirts. It's like to become a member of the club.
Oh yeah! Once you're into the cult, man, as Kevin Slick has told me, it's the Bash Vortex. Once you're in, you can't. It's like Hotel California. You can get in, you can check in, but you can never check out.
That is true. That is true. I think people, even if you know they get buried in their orange shirts down the road. I mean, it's just it stays with you. I think everybody wears it as an undershirt. I don't think they can ever take it off. It's like
they're tattooed. They're not shirts.
Oh, that actually just changes the whole picture of the Bash. Oh.
just joking.
Yes, we're just kidding. It's the Bash is always fun. It's always nice, and I love it that October. It's one of my favorite Bashes because this one in particular, the day as I'm traveling up is my birthday. And then I'll get to celebrate at the Monster Bash. So I get to travel up October 12th, and then the 13th through the 15th, I'll be able to enjoy Monster Bash. And then I'll travel home on the 16th in time to come home and celebrate my wedding anniversary with my wife. So it's like I got the Bash in between and nice events bookending it. Oh, you can't get anything better.
A lot of celebration there. That sounds great.
Oh, it does. It is. And just so people know that the Bash is held at Marriott Pittsburgh North, which is in the Cranberry Township. And we're going to be talking a lot about Bash, but I just want to remind people, go to monsterbash.us, www.monsterbash.us. And if you do by October 5th, you can get your three-day VIP pass for $45. Otherwise, it's $60 at the door for 3 days or $25 per day. So if you want to get the discount, you still have time to do it. And Ron, who's going to be at the Bash this year? What spectacular guests do we have?
Well, top of the list, we've got Greg Moffat. We had Greg once before, and now we're really holding a big Robot Monster celebration as he was the lead star of Robot Monster back in 1953. He was a child actor, and he was the main focus of the movie, and we got him coming back to Bash. And in fact, it's also kind of a dual Robot Monster celebration because they've just issued the restored Robot Monster on DVD and Blu-ray and in 3D. It's kind of a curiosity, Stephen, because Robot Monster was thought, you know, all the posters and lobby cards all said 3D. But it seemed that nobody had ever seen it in 3D. Even people that went to the theaters, there were two 2D prints. And the research team at 3D Archive, they located the original camera negative, and indeed it is 3D. And they've restored it and put it out on DVD and Blu-ray in 3D. And we're going to screen it in 3D. The 3D Archive folks will be at Monster Bash to introduce and talk about the restoration, as well as Greg Moffat. And we'll screen it. We'll be handing out 3D glasses to everybody. So we'll be screening Robot Monster in 3D.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. And just so listeners know, I purchased the Robot Monster, the new edition from Ron when I was at the Mid-Atlantic Nostalgia Convention. And I have not seen the movie in its entirety ever. I've seen bits and pieces, I think, like just pretty much everybody has. But I'll be watching it for the first time. And to give listeners a preview, I'll be interviewing Greg Moffitt a couple days after I'm recording this with Ron. So you'll be hearing it the next episode after this episode. And we're going to be talking about Robot Monster and other stuff. So I'm really looking forward to seeing it for the first time and in 3D. I mean, that is just, I'm excited.
And it'll be an event, and we'll be doing that Saturday night at Monster Bash.
But Greg Moffitt's not the only one you have coming. You have somebody I've been really wanting to meet. I interviewed her a few years ago on the show. You have Linda Miller coming from King Kong Escapes.
She is a sweetheart. What a nice woman. She spent a lot of time in Japan when she was younger, and she was in, of course, King Kong Escapes, made by the Toho folks, the Godzilla, company. And she's also in The Green Slime as well. So she's in two great fan favorite movies, and she'll be there signing autographs and happy to meet and talk to people.
And that's what I'm looking forward to. And I know from talking to her over the phone, I've yet to meet her in person. She's very nice and pleasant. I think guests that are coming, convention goers that are coming, are going to really enjoy getting a chance to walk up and talk with her and meet her and that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah. She's terrific with the fans, and she's really great. Just a great person to talk to.
But Ron, that's not the only person you have coming, because you have many, many other people coming. Another one was in a Gamera movie.
Yes, Carl Craig. He's in Destroy All Planets. And he's there's two kids that are like the main focus of the film, and they're Boy Scouts. And he has a very, very interesting background. Not only was he in that movie, he's done so much. He's a pilot. He's worked in Washington, D.C. at the White House. He's a fascinating background for this kid that started off in a Gamera movie. So he's just an interesting character and a great guy to talk to.
And speaking of a great guy to talk to, he was at last year's October Monster Bash. And to me, every generation has their Dracula. And I know you and I talked about this movie last year, Dracula versus Frankenstein, when we did our Monster Bash October 2022 preview. And we both enjoy this movie, and we know it's got dubious quality, to put it nicely. but Xandor Vorkoff is going to be there again, and he is one of the nicest people.
We had so many people that said that they couldn't make it last year and really wanted Xandor back. So we got him back. And, indeed, Dracula versus Frankenstein, the movie, it is probably the perfect guilty pleasure movie. It's not a great movie. It's not even a very good movie, but you love it. You got to love it. It's got Xandor. It's got Forrest J. Ackerman. It's got J. Carroll Nash in it. It's got John Bloom as the Frankenstein monster. And it is truly a top flight guilty pleasure movie. Just fun to watch.
I just want to add in, Lon Chaney Jr. too is in that movie.
Oh, well, how could I forget the Lonster? He's one of my all-time favorite actors. It is kind of sad that this is one of his last films, and he does look a little rough in it, but he's there. The Lonster's there.
And he does. I always enjoy his acting in that role. I think, he does a good job. Yes, I know he's on his nearing the end and that kind of stuff, but I never seen that as a boy, and that the role he played stuck with me for decades. It was him and that dog at the end. Oh, it's
Groton.
Yes. Now you actually have somebody who's a little different as a guest than these guests that we just mentioned. He's not known for movies and that kind of stuff. He's known for entertaining us in a different art form, and that's Tony Isabella.
Yes, comic books. Writer, editor. He worked for Marvel for many, many years. And there's a Dracula tie-in as he worked on Dracula Lives and a variety of monster comics for Marvel, including editing like Tales of the Zombie and writing for it as well. And he wrote strips like Daredevil, Spider-Man, Ghost Rider. And so he's done a lot of horror comic books for Marvel and as well as the superhero line. And he's also working on a book on classic horror movies. So he's a fan and he knows this stuff. So he's going to be a delight to have. Yeah, Tony Isabella at Monster Bash.
Oh, I'm definitely looking forward to meeting and talking with him. And it's just, I don't know. For me, with these last two, you're hitting my 70s sweet spot, you know, because I was born in the late 60s. So the 70s, 80s is like my golden age. Everybody has that time when you're a child to teenage years where everything is just hitting in all cylinders. And Xandor and Tony Isabella hit right into that sweet spot, you know, for me.
Yep, I get it. I mean, we all... At Monster Bash, it's, you know, if you were born anywhere between the 50s and the 80s, I mean, this is, it's the place for you because it's, you know, that's, we celebrate all the stuff we grew up with, monster movies, just pop culture in general from that period. And there's just so much fun stuff when things are a little simpler and just lots of fun.
And I want to add to that a little bit in that you said that when they're born in that, yes, it hits more in that sweet spot, but my son Ben will be with me, and he was born in 1999, and he loves coming to Monster Bash and has been to many. So it also transcends just that age group, but even in the younger generation.
Yeah, I think it's all of us people that grew up in that period, and then we've passed it on to the new generations. And, you know, my daughter, she does monster art and everything, and it's heartwarming to see some of the younger generation love this stuff too.
Oh, it is. And one thing I want to get people a feel for Monster Bash is, we've said it other times, we've talked about it, but it bears repeating because this could be somebody's first time listening. It is a family friendly event. People of all ages are there. I know there's this one couple, they bring all their children with them and they have a great time, you know, convention after convention. So you have future generations, like we said, enjoying it. But you have some regulars, you know, people that are going to be there. And a lot of them are horror hosts. Son of Ghoul, Drac, and Countess Carita are going to be there again, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Son of Ghoul's been on the air. Boy, I think it's like 36, 37 years of on-air broadcast TV for his show. Son of Ghoul from the Ohio area, and he's always a lot of fun and irreverent at times, but always with a smile on his face and just making everyone laugh. He's a good guy, and he also is a huge 16 millimeter collector of film, and he brings a lot of the film that we show at Monster Bash, and he hosts. We do Little Rascals on Sunday morning. We're not this bash, but frequently we do some Three Stooges, and he hosts that. And also Saturday morning cartoons. We run cartoons just like we all remember on Saturday morning at Monster Bash. And the staff passes out those little boxes of cereal to everybody. So it's finger food and cartoons on Saturday mornings at Monster Bash with Son of Ghoul hosting that.
And I think we almost should say pajamas are optional. You know, you can come in there with your pajamas if you really want to get the full Saturday morning experience.
And I have definitely seen that Saturday mornings at Bash, people in their pajamas, you bet. Now, you also mentioned Drac and Countess Carita. They run a very popular internet show, and Drac started in the Cleveland area way back in the 1980s. He had his show, The Frank and Drac Show, and hosted horror movies. And now he's hosting with Countess Carita online, and always a lot of fun. And if you talk to Drac at Monster Bash, Ask him about impersonations. He actually is a really good impersonator, voice impersonator of all kinds of classic Hollywood movie stars. Yeah, he's really good at it.
And for listeners that want to get more of a feel, I've interviewed both Son of Ghoul and Draken Countess Carita. You can look in the back catalog of the episodes and you can get it. And during that, Drak does some of his impressions, his Jack Benny and so on. And he loves to, and he really handles the kazoo, you know, so he'll start playing the tune.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
And he does beautiful artwork also. So I just want to make that mention that he has his posters there. And it, so he's
and a, he did the cover for Monster Bank magazine number 46.
Very talented man.
Yeah.
And speaking of a talented man, there's one other guest that you have that's been at the Monster Bash for longer than I've been there by far, and he's an independent filmmaker, David "The Rock" Nelson.
Yes, David is, I like to refer to him as a renegade monster movie maker. He is outside of the standard system for making movies. He's a homegrown monster movie maker, and he's been with us since the very first Monster Bash, since 97. And you can see him lurking the halls, shucking his movies. He usually carries a duffel bag full of DVDs, and you'll probably end up in his movie. If you just pass him in the hallway, he'll be shooting, you know, movies constantly. Quite a character. He is really a personality that is part of the Monster Bash family.
Oh, that is definite. That is definite. And you brought up one thing. You're going to give out breakfast-type food, you know, little cereal boxes on Saturday morning. But that's not the only food that the Bash gives out. You also give out what, Ron?
Well, on Friday night, we always do Mexican monster movie night, where we do a Mexican monster movie on the big screen in the theater room. And then we also pass out free tacos to the audience. Lots and lots and lots of tacos, so that you can enjoy your Mexican monster movie while munching on some Mexican food. Oh, and also Saturday, now that's Friday night. Saturday night, of course, we do the cake. We have five giant sheet cakes on Saturday night, and we do that in the lobby of the hotel, and it goes fast because it just everyone can have a free piece of cake, and we end up blowing through sheet cakes in about less than 20 minutes. We have five sheet cakes gone, probably more like 10 minutes. It's quite the feeding frenzy, but it's all fun, and everyone loves to get a piece of cake on Saturday night.
That's right. Ron likes to keep you sugared up so that way you can come back for the prize toss. That way everybody's ready for the prize toss at Saturday night, where not only does he feed you, he throws books, DVDs, toys, all kinds of stuff out in the crowd. Having said that, enter at your own risk, as Ron will say many times during the thing, because there is a possibility you could get hit if your coordination's not good and your eyesight's not good with one of the things being literally tossed out to the crowd. So just be aware that that could happen, but my son has good luck. Every year he seems to get either a Blu-ray or a DVD. So he has on that good touch about getting something nice.
Yep, you got to stay alert. But we toss out lots and lots and lots of prizes, monster movies and T-shirts and magazines and books and model kits. So it's just given back to the fans on Saturday late night at Monster Bash.
And one thing I want to mention, if you don't want your collectible type things to get tossed at you, to me, one of the best things of Monster Bash, besides getting to meet the celebrities, besides getting to meet everybody that you get to meet year after year and develop friendships, but one of the fun things to do is go through the dealer room and all the different dealers. I know you have your big table there of creepy classics, but you have also a bunch of other people there, and yes, there are the regulars that show up, and then also there's people that are coming to their first Monster Bash, and you get to check to see what they're bringing that's different. And you never know what hidden gem that you've always wanted but never knew you wanted until you finally see it on somebody's table.
Oh, yeah, it's like future shock. You walk into Monster Bash, and then you walk in the atrium area and then into the dealer ballroom, and your eyes will about pop out if you're a fan of classic monsters, because we have 150 tables just loaded with classic monster collectibles. You know, you'll see all kinds of stuff. Besides what Creepy Classics has, you'll see, you know, resin kits, model kits, vintage magazines in the dealer room, just everything you can think of, all kinds of vintage toys, there's masks and action figures, all kinds of stuff. People will have vintage comic books and, you know, just everything we loved as a kid. It's there at Monster Bash to reclaim if your stuff got sold in garage sales like mine probably did over the years. You know, you go away to school or something and mom and dad sell your stuff, and then you have to reclaim it as an adult, and then this is the place you can find all kinds of stuff you remember.
That is so true. And the only other thing I want to mention with the Monster Bash, there is a couple of things that go on every Monster Bash, and that is the game shows.
Yeah, the game shows. Leonard Hayhurst has really taken this seriously, and he is now kind of the Wink Martindale or Bob Barker of Monster Bash. At this October's Bash, we're going to have, he'll be doing What's My Monster, where, you know, attendees can raise their hand to join in the fun, and then they think of their of a monster that they can stump the panel with. And the audience will know what monster it is. That'll be shown by my daughter, is kind of the Vanna White. She'll have a big whiteboard, which will display the monster that the attendee has selected. And then we have a panel of experts, and they go through a question and answer session to try to figure out what the monster is. And if they don't guess it, then the attendee gets a prize pack, and it's a terrific fun. And the audience can participate as far, you know, being able to know what the monster is and get really excited about it and see how if they can stump the panel of experts or not. And the other game show that we do now, that Leonard also hosts, is on Sundays, and now I'm forgetting the name of it. Perhaps you know off the top of your head,
it's
Steven.
It's the match game version of the Monster Bash.
Oh, right, yeah, Monster Match Game. Yeah. We're Leonard will have, a lot of times it's some of our guests of honor will be the panel up there, and you know, it's just like the old match game show, and Leonard hosts that, and it's just lots of fun for the audience, and it's definitely participation game, so everyone, the whole audience, can have fun. And the game shows have become quite popular at Monster Bash.
I've been lucky enough to participate in both of them over the years, and it is a fun time. You know, you get up there. One year, one day, I might actually win one of these game shows. But
so you didn't stump the panel of experts, huh?
not with John Paul Checkett in there. You know, it's like he's the Achilles heel for most people. He just pulls stuff at you. Just when you think you're going to win, John Paul Checkett takes your victory.
he's one of the vendors, and he's a super expert at classic monster movies. So yeah, he makes it tough.
You definitely are earning it, and if you win one, and some people have, enjoy it, because it is tough when you're going against John Paul. Now, on the other hand, with match game, you want John Paul.
Right. So, all righty. I'm trying to think of some other things. Zach Zito, he is someone, that one of our regulars at Monster Bash, that does live theater, and he is unbelievably talented. He's going to be doing some classic stories, and he basically, it's simply amazing, he basically memorizes complete short stories, acts them out at the same time, and his memory must be phenomenal. I mean, it's just word for word Edgar Allan Poe or Bram Stoker or whoever H.P. Lovecraft he's done, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. and he, you know, dresses up the stage with a set, and he's a one-man amazing actor.
I've seen him in work. I've seen him do his stuff every year, there, every Monster Bash, because you do two a year. And I think it's listed in the program this year. You know, of course, these things could change, you know, before things happen. But what's listed is The Judge's House by Bram Stoker. You know, so I'm looking forward to seeing his reenactment of it. You know, even if you're familiar with the story, it's nice to see it brought to life.
And he is so talented. Yeah, it's really quite the show.
But listeners, we highly recommend you come, and it's monsterbash.us. The link will be in the show notes. Click on it. You'll find out more information about who's going to be there. If you didn't, you know, if you want to read a little stuff about them more than we talked about, what the schedule's going to be like and so on. And of course, the lodging is also listed there. And I think you had on Facebook recently, the main hotel is fully booked or just about fully booked, to the sister hotel is now, which is right across the street.
The last time my sales rep talked to me, the Marriott was sold out, which is the host hotel. But thankfully, there's a sister hotel that also offers the Monster Bash low rate, the Courtyard, which is only, it's really almost like making it like a Monster Bash campus, because it's only like 400 feet behind the Marriott is the Courtyard. So you're really still there. It's just a very short walk to the host hotel at the Courtyard, and there are still rooms available there.
So there you go. Come and enjoy it, and you'll get to see Ron and I and all the other people that we talked about having a great time. So,
oh, and we kick it off on Friday the 13th in October, October 13th, 14th, and 15th.
Yes, so 2023. But that's not all we're here to talk about today, Ron. We're here to talk about something else, something I've never seen before, but I got to see in preparation for our discussion, Dr. X.
I'm glad you finally got to see it. It is quite an interesting film from different angles. There's all kinds of interesting things about it. And I had seen it and thought it was in fact, the first time I saw it, I just saw the end of it. I caught it on one of the Turner stations back in the late 80s. And I was like, what is this? It was, it's in two strip Technicolor. So it has kind of a muted color to it, almost looking like a tinted lobby card. And I saw the very end where the monster is fighting the reporter. And I was like, wow, what on earth? I had no idea what it was. And then I found out it was Dr. X. And since then, it's become a favorite of mine to watch during the Halloween season, inspired by a friend of mine, Mike Adams. He told me, you got to watch this Halloween time. So I do. I watch it every Halloween time now.
And it was my first time watching it. And then you look at the cast. Lionel Atwell, Faye Ray. I mean, right there, you're talking about two of the icons of classic horror, putting this the same film together, playing father and daughter. And it was just so enjoyable to watch it and to see a pre-code horror film. And as you said, the two-color Technicolor technique being used, it was really fun to watch, because it's a lot of people don't realize, you know, color was available back then. It just wasn't really utilized for a variety of reasons, mostly because they thought the public didn't want to see it because they didn't think it made as much money as it could have if it would have been black and whites were doing. I mean, who knows?
Well, and expense, it was much more expensive than black and white, and they had to have a lot more lighting. And so it created a very hot set, because they had to use a lot more lighting than they normally would. But it has such a unique look. And Warner Brothers at the time made two horror films in that two-strip Technicolor almost back-to-back, Mystery of the Wax Museum and Dr. X. And they both have that wonderful look. They both have Faye Ray, and they both have Lionel Atwill. And that really interesting look, that Technicolor look. which is, it's very different. It's very, it's muted colors, but they're just really nice. Nice to look at.
And to give people an idea what the movie's about, it's, there's a killer who's killing people when the moon is full, and he's using his surgical knife, which is only from Vienna, and only one place in their area uses such a knife. the Academy of Surgical Research, which, you know, makes sense, you know, surgical knife. And not only is there, is it the killer killing them, but also ripping out something from their throat, which would be basically like cannibalism. So you have murder, you have cannibalism, you have psychiatric type stuff because of the full moon. And they're trying to figure out who's doing it, but because of the knife, they figure it's got to be, the detectives figure it's got to be from the Academy of Surgical Research. But of course, as all great detectives do, they decide to let the head of the surgical research team conduct his own investigation and give him a couple of days to do it before they come in and try to solve it themselves. And that's where Lionel Atwell's character, Dr. Jerry Xavier, is in charge of. Now, we pronounce it Xavier, but I swear to God, it was pronounced differently in the movie, Ron. And Ron, I want you to listen. I clipped it. You'll hear him say, you'll hear the reporter Lee Tracy, when he's calling his editor, talk about a couple of the names of people that are there when he's finding out what's going on. And then you'll hear him say Lionel Atwell's character's name.
Just now, Stevens, O'Halloran, and a guy named Dr. Xavier arrived. Something's doing.
Now, when he first said that, when I'm listening to this, I was like, Xavier. And I had not looked at Wikipedia. I had not read anything on it. So I was just like, and then I heard somebody say Xavier, and I'm thinking, okay. So most of the time they're saying Xavier, and then other times they're saying Xavier. And I just thought it was interesting because they didn't have to come to a consensus on pronouncing the name. But you told, when you and I talked about this at Mid-Atlantic Nostalgia Convention, you said you never heard that.
I'm sure I heard it, but I never noticed. I didn't, like you did, you noticed that it was pronounced differently at different times in the film. And that's one, the whole movie, as you've just described, the one flaw, but which is I easily overlook, is that the script is ridiculous. I mean, it really, in real life, no one does what's done in this movie. It's absurd. I mean, it's taken to, you know, you always talk about like in movies, they would never go behind their, don't open the door. They're going to open the door. This is even worse. I mean, it's like everything you can think of that would be logical is thrown out the window. As you mentioned, the police detectives letting the private guy who suspected himself conduct the investigation. It's just crazy. It makes no sense, but it looks so good and it's so fun and the acting's so good. I overlook that. Just, you got to unplug and just not try to like figure out why people are doing the, you know, the motivations are ridiculous, but it's a load of fun.
and that's because Lee Tracy, who plays the hero character, so to speak, the reporter, is played with such comedy. You know, he's basically there for laughs, but he's also the hero. It was kind of reminding me of back in the day, like with Bob Hope, where he'd be playing these things. You know, he's the hero, but he's also doing things that are just funny. And
yeah,
so I was getting that same take. So a lot of that, what you're saying, like you have to turn your brain off. I was just looking at it. Oh, okay, this is a comedy with horrific elements and cannibalism and other stuff.
Exactly. It's like, they threw the whole kitchen sink in on this one. Now something interesting is that this film was shown in a lot of places, including TV, in black and white, even though it is two-strip color, and it's not the same movie. The movie was shot scene by scene separately. It wasn't like that they made black and white prints and color prints. They shot two different versions. They would first shoot like the color version, then they would shoot the black and white version. And so if you watch them back to back, you'll see the dialogue is different. I mean, some of the scenes are, you know, basically the setups are the same as far as being the same scene, but the camera angles are different. Some of the script has been changed. Some of the names have been changed. It's really interesting to see it. And the black and white version was actually the harder version to find. And now that they brought it out on Blu-ray and DVD, they put both versions, at least on the Blu-ray, it's both versions. You can see the black and white version and the color version. And they are different. I mean, it's the same story, same actors, same movie, but it's different because every scene was shot differently and some of the script was changed. So it is, it's like two movies. That's another kind of oddity about Dr. X.
And when I was talking about the plot, and of course, Lionel Atwood's character, Dr. Xavier, or Xavier, whatever how he pronounced, I cannot pronounce it the wrong way easily.
Yeah.
but you heard, listeners, you already heard how they pronounced it, but it's just, you know, he's trying to solve it, and you have your suspects, so you have that mystery going on, like, who's doing the killings? And you have some good character actors doing these different roles, so you have these different archetypes. So there's a lot of suspects that this could be this guy, it could be that guy, and they look the role, they look menacing, they look odd, these other doctors, and they all have different motivations. So that part I really enjoyed, that it did have you, I don't want to spoil it for people that haven't seen it, but it does have you wondering, who is the murderer? You know, who is the one doing it, and is it Lionel Atwell's character too? I mean, is he a hero, is he a villain, you know, and that kind of stuff. It really keeps the wheels spinning.
Yeah, you really don't know who it is until towards the end, but it's also because everyone is, it's just so absurd, the characters, but you don't know who is the killer until towards the end. Yeah.
Oh, it's just wild. And to give listeners an idea, some of the dialogue that Ron brought up, you know, there's a thing where Dr. Haynes, one of the suspects, one of his quotes was, "Were the murdered women attacked?" You know, it's just like, when you think about it, it's like, I just feel sorry for some of the actors having to say the dialogue. You know, it's like, okay, here you go. Here's your script. Go for it, man. You know, and that kind of stuff. So it was just, I think it's a comedy.
And yet somehow it comes off, you know, it's not like an Ed Wood movie where you're just laughing. You can kind of gloss over the ridiculous dialogue here just because you had a better director, that's for sure, Michael Curtiz, compared to Ed Wood. Boy, who would ever compare those two? But it's fun. I highly recommend people to if they've never seen it, or even if they have, to just watch it on a Halloween, a nice autumn evening, and the Moon Killer will be out again.
Now, Ron, what was one of your favorite scenes that you want to talk about? You know, because there's a lot of fun scenes in this. What's one or two of them?
Oh, okay. Well, there's. It's goofy, but I think it's fun when Lee Tracy, the reporter, is in the is hiding in a closet, and there's a skeleton in there. It's, you know, it's a medical school's, you know, storage room, and he's, you know, there's a skeleton that he bumps and it's bouncing and he's singing to it. It's goofy, but I like it. And I have to say, probably the best scene, as far as being a monster movie fan, is how I first stumbled on it, which, without giving away who the Moon Killer is. And by the way, the Moon Killer uses what's called synthetic flesh. And that's another absurdity. I mean, why does he even do that? I mean, he puts, there's another reason that I won't give away, but he slaps it all over his face. And he then looks very horrific, but I don't understand why he did that. But there's that final, well, not final, but close to the end scene where the reporter, Lee Tracy, is fighting the monster. And it's, you know, there's a lantern that's thrown, and it's just, it's really a rough and tumble fight with a monster. And I enjoy that scene a lot, too. And, of course, the leering. Whenever you see Lionel Atwill leer from, you know, one side of the room to the other, you got to love it. He's just so good at leering. And so those are just little images that I love from the movie.
And one of the things with the synthetic flesh, I love it because the character keeps saying, synthetic flesh.
Synthetic Why?
Flesh. As he's putting it on, I'm just like, in case you didn't hear it the first time, it's repeated.
And why is he talking to himself? I don't
Well, I figured he's crazy, so at that point it's just it's but I gotta give credit for the look, because for those of us that grew up with watching 70s horror, or even more, you know, not that long ago with Silence of the Lambs, I mean, it does have that Texas Chainsaw look, or Silence of the Lambs, Buffalo Bill look to the face.
It's a horrific monster look. Yeah,
it is a great makeup design for it's 1932.
Yeah,
I mean that's pretty scary. You know, for nowadays, I mean, if you were to take a still of that and show people, they'd think it's like a black and white version of a picture of a 70s, 80s, or 90s film. You know, with the look.
Well, as you bring this up, it's probably one of the reasons they have. Lee Tracy being such a comedic element, because without that, I can't imagine 1932 audiences watching this thing. Some of those scenes are really, really disturbing and creepy. And so I'm sure they said, you know, they thought, well, we need to lighten this up a little bit. So they added the comedic humor to it. It's pretty, pretty wild looking film in color too, you know, that it's scary.
And I enjoyed it was in color, but I kind of want to get it so I can watch it in black and white too, because I'm curious with the shadows and everything and how that would change the view. Because as we all know, one of the good things about color not taking hold when it did was we got these great black and white noir type films with the shadows and the use of that to really enhance a lot of films. Night of the Hunter, to be an example, or Touch of Evil, just to name a couple, you know, where they can really enhance the picture. And I wonder, like, if color would have taken off in those early 30s and would have been the big hit, how would that have affected these other classics? Because then the default would have been color instead of black and white. And would those movies had the same impact being in color? It makes you wonder about that a little bit.
Yeah.
But speaking of comedy, there is another character that is pretty much 100% a comedic personality in that, and that is the maid.
Oh yeah,
Amy Leela Bennett, and she turns it to 11. Now she doesn't turn it to Una O'Connor level, which is off the charts.
You're right though. She plays the goofy, frightened maid to the hilt. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I know. She has some lines. I mean, one of my lines is, "Something tells me if I go into that room tonight, tomorrow I'll be in my coffin," and she delivers it so well. It's just, I don't know. I just enjoyed her character. And I also like it when, you think Lee Tracy's character had played her, which he did in order to get in the house to, score an interview, which he got to meet Faye Ray, and Faye Ray, easily escorts him right back out of the house, you know, basically just realizes what's going on, gets him right out. And as he's walking, she dumps the washing water or whatever, the water on top of him from above. And it's an ongoing line by Lee Tracy's character, Lee Taylor, the reporter, is bad luck. He says that line constantly. And it's just, it's good. It's a good, timing is there, and it's just nice how to, you know, but how some people get their comeuppance a little bit in little slight ways, because he is playing this guy who's like, oh, I can charm in and out. I really don't want to be on this case because it scares me, but they're telling me I got to do this case. And he's, and it's kind of, it was kind of interesting.
You know, that's it's another absurdity in the film that you can overlook, but now come on, Faye Ray, after Lee Tracy or Lee Taylor, the character, forces his way pretty much into the house and is really annoying. And yet by a third of the movie, Faye Ray likes him. But come on. I don't understand. I just don't get why Faye Ray would suddenly, you know, warm up to his character, which it was nothing more than crass and rude the whole time. Just it's crazy stuff.
And her character is, it's, you're talking about total opposites, you know. It's just it would, nobody could see this lasting, let's put it that way. It's sheer, it's purely an infatuation, but somehow it's like one of those classic movies which we normally see in the 50s, where they meet, there's a little bit of, you know, oh, we're not getting along, and the next thing you know, they're lovey-dovey, and at the end, they're going to get married. You know, it kind of has those 50, you know, preluding to the 50s.
Yeah.
In a movie about cannibalism, murders, and other stuff.
Yeah.
I had to bring it up because it's just, it still blows my mind how they literally throw every, oh, cannibalism, yes, murder, yes, you know, just keep adding it in, we're going to do it all.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, a big ball of wax of craziness, you know, mystery, horror, sci-fi with the equipment and everything. Oh, yeah, why all the electrical equipment? It looks like Frankenstein's lab when the synthetic flesh is being applied, and that it doesn't seem like it's being used for anything. But, to reenact the murder, which they do, you know, to try to catch the murderer, they use all this like expensive scientific equipment, like as if it was like made specifically for this purpose. And it's like, that's crazy. It's, but you just got to unplug and enjoy the movie, enjoy the ride.
And they get wax figures like right off the bat. It's like, I got these wax figures I've been waiting to use for this experiment, and now I can finally use it. I'm adding the laugh to myself, but it's just, there's wax figures all of a sudden, and there's other things, and it's just, but it reminds me, you have a mad scientist type character, and of course, like all mad scientist type characters, and there's a lot of them in there, all the scientists are off kilter. Not one scientist is a normal person. I think we can agree on that, right?
Yeah, they all have their eccentricities, yes.
Yes, and so let's throw all the mad scientists together and let you figure out which one. But, you know, it's, why do something that's simple when you can do something that is extravagant, that makes an impression? Dear At Ron, we have to put on a show with our scientific experiments. We got to show big and broad so people can see it in the back.
Yeah, it's definitely an over the top movie from beginning to end, and I think a lot of that two strip Technicolor look has a Halloween feel to it. There's a lot of oranges and blues, and it has a very autumn feel to it.
Oh, it does, and it's weird. Okay. I know we're not supposed to think too hard about this film, but I got to bring this part up. So at the beginning of the film, you know, it's cold. I mean, I think I could see like mist coming from the people's mouths, like when they're outside at the dock area. And it could be the fog machine. It could be thrown off a little bit, but they're wearing heavier clothes. So like you said, it's fall.
Right, right.
But yet Lee and Joanne, Faye Ray and Lee Tracy, I find it interesting at least, character's name and the actor's name are the same, but makes it easy. Go to the beach, and they talk about, yeah, right, you want to go in the water, and I'm thinking, you want to go in that water?
Yeah,
It's got to be like October or something like that, and you want to go, or maybe November, and you want to go in the water. I'm like, I don't know where you guys are. I think this is taking place in like New York or something. I
mean, yeah, it's supposed to be New York, so it should be. Yeah, it's probably really cold based on the beginning of the film. So it's craziness, that's for sure.
But I'm glad you picked it because it is enjoyable. And listeners, I know we're trying to talk around some things, so we don't want to spoil the ending. And things like that.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a good movie to seek out and get. I mean, it cost, how much does Dr. X cost, Ron, to get the Blu-ray version?
Oh, it's $20.
Yeah, so we're talking, it's like $20. It's a very reasonable price. You get the two versions, and you can watch both just to see which one do you think is better. I mean, the differences from what I've read between the black and white and the color version, they're minor script-wise. There's some ad-libs here. There's a little extra dialogue there. But really...
But different angles, too. Lots of different camera angles.
That's what you're looking for, is the cinematography. How different... How much does it affect it being filmed in black and white as compared to color? That I'm interested in watching just to see, like I said before, with the shadowing, does that have an effect on the movie? Because I think some movies are enhanced that are being suspenseful by being in black and white, because I've seen some color movies in black and white, because, you know, when you and I were growing up, it was a lot of times you're watching something on a small black and white TV, even though it was filmed in color, you never knew. And it's interesting when you watch it that way, how it changes the experience when you see it.
All the movies I watched at home, I didn't see them in color until I was probably 13. We had a black and white Zenith TV up till I was about 13 years old.
Yeah, I didn't. There's some movies I didn't know were in color until, you know, years and years, decades later. And then all of a sudden somebody's watching, like we're watching it, and it's like, wait, it's in color? I've seen it, because my mind only registered in black and white. And there's still a few movies that if you were to ask me what color it would be, I would still tell you black and white, because I saw it so many times in black and white and in my formative years, then it's hard for me to remember. No, it's actually in color.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about him. I just want to ask you, what did you think of the detectives?
The character or the acting? Oh, the detective. No, I was thinking reporter. I didn't watch this right before we were talking, so I really don't remember the detective that well.
Well, I was meaning all of them, like all the police officers. So, but it was just, I just thought it was like, you and I said earlier, I thought it was interesting how, we'll let Dr. Xavier solve it. But they were like on it so quick, and you thought, I was thinking there would be more of a plot, instead of a plot device, more in the plot, more in the script, especially near the end, with the ticking time clock, how much time they have and so on, and those kind of things to solve the crime. It was just interesting to see how it all goes, but I really enjoyed it, and I'm glad you picked it. And I think, you know, people should see this movie. You can rent it if you don't want to buy it, and if you want to see what it's like ahead of time, you can rent it digitally. There is a place, if you search it, there is somebody at one of their Facebook sites has the whole movie there. I don't know how long that's going to last. So if you want to get a taste of what it's like, you can do that if you want to get an idea before you buy it. But I definitely recommend, from what we described, if that sounds like your kind of movie, I recommend you get it. And definitely the version, the Blu-rays, they have the two versions on it. And I'm sure it has other bonus features too, besides the two versions. You would know more.
It does. Yeah, it has a lot of bonus material on it, as well as the black and white version. I did have, before the Blu-ray came out, I did get a copy of it from another fan in New York, and the quality was really rough, but it was neat seeing it, the differences. But now the Blu-ray, the black and white version, is just as sharp as the color version. It's crystal clear. So it was really great to see the black and white version, really nice and sharp too.
I recommend it, and listeners, if you want to get a copy, They probably will have some at Monster Bash if you want to go instead of, you know, instead of paying shipping, go out to Pittsburgh and instead of, you know, and enjoy the 3-day experience from October 13th through the 15th of 2023 and go to Monster Bash. Again, monsterbash.us. You can see Ron. He'll be busy. He'll be wearing orange. He'll be all over the place, but I'm sure he'll spend a couple minutes if he has a chance to talk to you, at least to welcome you to the show and that kind of thing. But when you're there, all the guys in the orange shirts are wonderful. You can talk to anybody there, and they'll point you in the right direction. If you ask where something is, they'll let you know. And you have some of the best you have the best volunteers of any convention. And it's just a wonderful time to have the people there to dedicate their time and energy to help people like myself out to have a good time at the convention. I want to thank you for putting on the show you do. And I also want to thank you, and you and I have talked about this before, but I want to make it, you know, so it's on air. What a pleasant surprise at the last Monster Bash for you to give me that Fori Award. It was so, I don't know, words can't really do it justice for me right now, but it was so touching and fun. And I'm so appreciative that you did that. It means a lot more to me than you'll ever know.
Well, the Monster Bash Award, which is in a likeness of Forrest J. Ackerman, the Fori. It's for people that hold the torch and keep all this fun, you know, pop culture monster movies alive. And you do such a service with your podcast. You really do. And it's very well deserved.
Well, thank you. And thanks again for putting on the shows and having, and again, I want to thank all your volunteers, some of which have been on the show before, like Leonard and Tom and so on. You guys,
all
great
people.
Yeah,
we've got 45 of my family and friends, and they are just, every single one of them are, they're unique people, and they're probably the friendliest convention and staffers you'll ever see.
Oh, they are. And I want to give Joe a shout out, the High Constable Joe. You're the man.
Yeah, Joe is our staffer that he stays up all night long, and he is a Pennsylvania constable, and he watches, you know, make sure no funny business goes on late at night with the vendor tables or anything. He's our late night security, and he's a great guy.
He is, and thanks again, Ron, and I hope everybody comes to the convention.
Thank you, Stephen. I really appreciate it.
I hope you guys enjoyed that episode, and I hope you're coming to Monster Bash 2. You're going to hear the trailer, or promo, I should say, for Monster Bash of October as soon as I'm done talking. Just to remind everybody, if you want to leave us feedback, please email us at diecastmoviepodcast@gmail.com or leave us a message on our Facebook page. Our next episode after this one is going to be my interview with Gregory Moffat, the star of Robot Monster, who was also in Adventures of Superman, Let's Dance, and other things. So I hope you guys will come and tune into that episode, which will be coming out in just a few days. Everybody have a good day. Thanks for listening, as always. And now to the Monster Bash promo.
Here comes Monster Bash to the Marriott Pittsburgh North.
This October 13th, 14th, and 15th.
Guest movie and TV stars signing autographs. 150 vendor tables of cool, new, and vintage monster movie merchandise. Toys, model kits, monster magazines, comics, DVDs, Blu-rays, VHS tapes, T-shirts, and so much more. Guest stars signing autographs include Greg Moffat from the low-budget classic Robot Monster, The Adventures of Superman, Science Fiction Theater, and more. Linda Miller, the star of King Kong Escapes, and featured in the cult classic film The Green Slime. Carl Craig, child star of the Gamera Japanese Giant Monster Fest, Destroy All Planets. Tony Isabella, iconic Marvel Comics writer and editor, known for Dracula Lives, Ghost Rider, The Amazing Spider-Man, Tales of the Zombie, and more. Xander Vorkov, star of Dracula vs. Frankenstein, will be bashing.
The 1970s Dracula.
TV horror host favorites, Ohio TV legend Son of Ghoul. Plus, Drac and Countess Carita. Meet them all, see special events, talks, and shop wall-to-wall monster movie collectible vendors. Admission is $25 a day or $60 for the whole weekend of entertainment. Discounts available in advance online at monsterbash.us or creepyclassics.com. It's Monster Bash, October 13th through the 15th, 2023, at the Pittsburgh Marriott North in Cranberry Township, Pennsylvania. Don't scare miss it.